Now, to take you from the streets to the suites, live from the 17th floor of Madison Square Garden, this is the Curtis Lewa Show.
1, 2, 3, kick it.
Minutes after the hour, this the Curtis Lewa Show, and we continue to spread our wings across America, putting more boots on the ground in different ports of call. Our mission fully intact, the urge to merge the AM and the FM listeners. And on this particular day, we welcome on board Fresno's 105.5 FM, The Truth Shall Set You Free. Another FM brother in solidarity jumping on board. Because you see, what we do is we combine the video with the audio flow. This is the future. The technology is here and now. And we combine the two. So let's just get right down to it. As you eyeball, if you can, on your laptop or your computer or your wireless, Crackberry, a.k.a. Blackberry or iPhone, at CurtisLewa.com, all the video vignettes. And then it mixes right with that audio flow at CurtisLewa.com. Remember that $328,000 worth of snapshots of Air Force One flying over the World Trade Center site in Lower Manhattan and scaring the bejeebers out of people on both sides of the Hudson River? Remember that? Remember the video footage of people running for their lives thinking it was the second 9/11 attack? And then all of a sudden the White House was like pointing fingers in all different directions, and some schlub who had a desk that said he was military director of operations in the White House, a post I never heard of before, had to take the hit and impale himself. So now all of a sudden people have said, you know, for all that money that we spent for photos to be added to the file, why can't we see the photos of Air Force One being tailed by the two F-16 fighters, one of them trailing off? And then all of a sudden, the White House very abruptly said, we have no plans to release them. No plans to release them. What are these, classified photos? And yet you ask the White House, are they classified? Oh, no, they're not classified, but they're being kept from public view. Why would you keep them from public view? How is it you could scare the bejeebers out of people on both sides of the Hudson River on a workday at 10 o'clock in the morning, claiming you had to add some extra photos to the file, and then when being requested to show the photos, because at least there's something positive that comes from that, you won't show the photos. But Barack Obama is hell-intent on releasing the CIA torture photos. He can't wait. Oh, we got to release those. We got to flush them all out of the system. That's crazy. Absolutely nuts. Our number is 1-877-CURTIS, the number 8. That's 1-877-287-8478. Can't look at Air Force One flying over the old World Trade Center site with an F-16 jet at its side. Oh, no. That's sort of hush-hush, mush-mush, classified White House style. But we can see released CIA torture photos that could cause our troops all kinds of drama in Afghanistan and Iraq. You know, when the wigged out Islamic fascists decide that they want to retaliate. And who are they going to retaliate first and foremost? Against a soldier with an RPG or a weapon that suddenly is sprung into action, and then they take revenge out in that capacity. 1-877-CURTIS, number 8. But today, oh, celebration is in the air. The Mariachi Band, once again, following the President of the United States everywhere because it is Cinco de Mayo. Cinco de Mayo, and even though many of the festivities have been canceled throughout Mexico, where the fear, fright, hysteria, and hype continue, unfortunately, things are slowly normalizing. So that today, the czarina of our homeland security, who has folded like a cheap camera with every major decision she's had to make, Janet Napolitano, that's who this flu is named after, N1H1, Napolitano flu, decided to say, hey, we can take a chill pill now It looks like the worst is over.
We are not in a place where we can simply sit back and see what happens. We have to lean forward. This is not a time for complacency or the belief that we can simply declare victory over H1N1 and move on.
I am the swine flu. I am the swine flu. Joe Biden, come out and play. I'll gladly pay you on Tuesday for a hamburger today. You can come out. You spread fear, hype. You spread hysteria. You acted out of your mind. But Joe Biden, come out and play.
I had a Swiss cheeseburger, jalapeno pepper, and you put ketchup on it, or we do that ourselves?
We got a little for you.
All right, ketchup. And a root beer. Medium well.
Jalapeno pepper. He wanted to show that he was going to stand up to swine flu. Hey, did they let him out of the closet? And then the president of the United States. No, he couldn't have American cheese on his burger. Listen to what he ordered on his. I'll gladly pay you on Tuesday with taxpayers' money for a hamburger today.
I'm going to have a your basic cheddar cheeseburger, medium well. I just want mustard, no ketchup. If you got like a spicy mustard or something like that, or a Dijon mustard, something like that, lettuce, tomato.
A spicy mustard? A Dijon mustard? Well, let me tell you something. As part of the Cinco de Mayo festivities, and just a little history lesson, a lot of people seem to think that Cinco de Mayo is Mexican Independence Day. No. Mexican Independence Day is September. Oh, you can give me a little bit of my music there, the Mariachi Band. They've been put away for 10 days with this fear, fright, hysteria, and hype. But it's September 17th. This is a celebratory day, Cinco de Mayo. Oh, it signals the unbelievable victory of the Mexican forces against the French forces. They were overwhelmed in Mexico south of the border many, many years ago. But it is incredible that on this day, there is a lawsuit that has been filed against spices. That's right, spicy foods, claiming that it has caused salmonella. Now, Frank Morano, our producer, I want you to accept my brief, my amicus brief, because I am a friend of the court and I am a friend of those who want to defy and stand up to salmonella. On this day, Cinco de Mayo, in between breaks, I will be eating meatballs in chipotle sauce, pork tostadas, spicy pork quesadillas, chili burritos, chipotle marinated chicken and pine nut quesadas, jalapeno cilantro clams with lime butter, because I will defy salmonella. I have stood up to salmonella in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn over the years, and I will defy him again with my amicus brief, my friend of the court brief, as I stand with the spice makers. Please stand. Have spice. Eat spicy foods today, because they're trying to claim that spicy foods now cause salmonella. Let's go to the phones and to Al, who's calling from WABC. Welcome to the Curtis Sliwa Show, Al.
Hey, Curtis, how are you? Great show, man. Listen, what I wanted to talk about is there's a lot of criticism of Obama and the deficit. And that's all well and good, but too often what gets overlooked is the great enabler of this deficit spending, the Federal Reserve. And what's going on now is to cover these debts, the Fed is printing enormous sums of money.
Oh, Al, hold on a second. You're right, they're stacking paper. They're stacking paper, but I got to flip the script from stacking paper to go to our affiliate out in Portland, Oregon, KXL, Rick. Welcome to the Curtis Sliwa Show, Rick.
How you doing tonight, Curtis?
Man, did I flip the script or what on that, Rick?
Yeah. Hey, Curtis, listen. There are no photos of that plane. They didn't take any photos. That was a last-ditch excuse to cover up their ignorance and stupidity. No pictures exist. Trust me, none exist. That's why they won't show up.
So, Rick, what you're claiming is that there is some technology here in that they sent Air Force One over the World Trade Center site with the F-16 escorts because they wanted to see how New Yorkers and folks working in New Jersey would react to a plane flying so close to the towers and windows of their buildings.
You know what? That's almost exactly what I was going to say. You took the words exactly. That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
That's why I had to dish our friend Al there and push him to the side because, Rick, I felt it. I felt it deep in my soul that there was solidarity between you, Rick, at KXL in Portland, Oregon, and yours truly, high atop Madison Square Garden, where we are 17 floors above the hardwood. And my head is hard. You know, it's like Calabrese, hard-headed. I realize that. But on this, we're right. Mr. President, tomorrow you need to address this first and foremost. How is it you can release photos of the CIA torturing enemies of America, al-Qaeda and Taliban operatives, but you cannot release photos of Air Force One flying over the World Trade Center site with an F-16 escort? What a double disgrazia! Anyway, up next, it's time for us to talk about the Bush aides trying to soften the torture report that Barack Obama wants on his desk, lickety-split, on this, the Curtis Lewis. This is so disrespectful to the memory of the great Harry Carey, even though he was always half in the bag, that she should have committed Harry Carey. This is Denise Richards. I remember the last female who decided to sing Roseanne Barr, please. We need to ban these people. If they can't sing, save it for the shower stall. This is a form of torture.
Ozzy was better than that.
Well, you know something, ladies and gentlemen, there's been a lot of talk about what might happen to the lawyers who were part of the Bush administration's team who wrote the memorandums authorizing the interrogations of the al-Qaeda and the Taliban detainees. To try to see where this will all lead to, on the line we have Professor Steve Vladek, Associate Professor, American University. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Thanks, Curtis.
Okay, so Professor, we've heard a lot of senators and elected officials sort of flexing, you know, saying, oh, we need to get the lawyers who put these memorandums together. Will anything happen to them?
I think we still don't know. I mean, I think what everyone really is waiting for is there's a report coming out, and there's a story in tomorrow's New York Times about this report that's being done by the Justice Department's internal watchdog, so the Office of Professional Responsibility, that's supposed to be rather critical of these lawyers, that actually apparently recommends at least that ethical charges be pursued against them. So I think a lot is going to depend on what this report says.
Now, what do you think is the culpability of the second layer of lawyers, for instance? Just because one group of lawyers puts together a memorandum, studies it, and says, we feel, Mr. President, that we can move forward with this procedure. If you're also a lawyer and you're studying their report, do you have a responsibility to object, to question, to stand up, indicate what your differences are with that policy, or do you just have to shut up and fulfill the requirements of the policy?
Well, I think it depends on whether the differences are merely differences in policy, as you say, or whether what you really believe that what you're seeing is a memo that authorizes something that's illegal. I mean, I think, you know, if it's just a policy difference, hey, they're your bosses. But if it's something that actually you believe is a crime, I think there is a responsibility, at least an ethical one, if not a legal one, on the lawyer in that situation.
Now, how does a lawyer, just any lawyer, it could be a lawyer in the Obama administration, a lawyer in the Bush administration, how are they able to analyze techniques like waterboarding, wall slamming, head slapping, other techniques, and determine whether one procedure can be done legally and another can't?
Well, there's an element of the surreal to all of this. I mean, you know, the memo, one of the more infamous memos talks about Abu Zubaydah in particular and basically says all these things are okay if you do them once. Obviously, we're not talking about if you do them more than once. But of course, they had to know that these were not meant to be one-off, you know, techniques, that the whole point of the techniques was to get as much information out of these detainees as possible.
Now, there are always operational orders for all agencies, police department, public safety agencies, and they have to be administered, and then a supervisor has to oversee to make sure that they are done appropriately according to the guidelines. Was that actually done in this process? Were there supervisors who were expected to oversee that every I was dotted, every T was crossed?
At the very least, the person who is at least then in charge of the Office of Legal Counsel, he's now a federal appeals judge in Nevada, Jay Bybee, you know, I think his responsibility as head of that office at least gets us that far. As for others, you know, I think it's hard to say because every administration runs their chain of command differently.
Now, what do you think of this new issue, particularly since it relates to transparency, Professor, the fact that we will soon see photos of CIA agents utilizing some of these torture methods against Al-Qaeda and Taliban operatives? That will be released. The president has made that clear. But he will not release the photo of Air Force One with the F-16 fighter jet trailing it that just last week flew over the World Trade Center site. I mean, you scratch your head and you wonder, how could you release one but not the other?
I mean, you know, I think we're all lucky not to be in the position of having to make decisions like that. But, you know, but I do think there's a larger point here, which is that the release of these memos, the release of at least the interrogation photos, you know, I think it's part of this larger principle that sunshine really is the best disinfectant.
Yeah, well, I want to see Air Force One. It costs us $325,000 for that photo opportunity and that F-16 jet. I want to shed a little sunshine on those photos, and who knows? Maybe carrying them around in wallet-sized photos so that we can all have a memory of how our money was wasted on that morning. Anyway, thanks, Professor Steve Ladig, Associate Professor, American University. And up next, oh, yeah, seems like it's fading fast from the hype, the hysteria, the fear, the fright of the swine flu. We'll give you an update on all of this on Cinco de Mayo Day. Celebrations almost non-existent in Mexico, but it won't stop us from celebrating right here on the Curtis Sliwa Show.
All that time alone made me go insane. Wasn't hard to see I had lost control. Then you came away, still I don't know how, and you brought me away.
Minutes after the hour. I should just shut up. What a great song. Incredible. And after hiding for 10 days, people are now beginning to emerge out of their hovels. Whether it was south of the border in Mexico, which was hit by the fear, fright, hysteria, and hype of this swine flu pandemic. Or throughout the United States, which had its pockets of concern, of overreaction. We now have a chance to look back at these 10 days with this being Cinco de Mayo. With Dr. Vijaya Nair, author of Prevent Cancer, Strokes, Heart Attacks, and Other Deadly Killers. Thank you for joining us again, Dr. Vijaya.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Curtis. Glad to be on the show.
And now we have a chance to review what has transpired with the healthcare professionals. First, we go to Dr. Chang from the World Health Organization.
It really is all of humanity that is under threat.
World humanity under threat. That's number one. Dr. Nair. Number two, we have Dr. Besser of the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta.
Dr. Besser, because we're getting kind of a mixed message here. Are we overreacting to this outbreak? Are the government and the media guilty of hyping this?
We are not overreacting to this outbreak. With a new infectious disease, There's a lot of unknown, a lot of uncertainty. And you basically get one shot. You get one chance to try and reduce the impact on people's health. And so what you do is you take a very aggressive approach, and as you learn more information, you can tailor your response.
And then finally, Dr. Nair, we heard from Janet Napolitano today, our head of Homeland Security.
We are not in a place where we can simply sit back and see what happens. We have to lean forward. This is not a time for complacency or the belief that we can simply declare victory over H1N1 and move on.
Now, Dr. Nair, having listened to all three of these professionals, it seems at the end of 10 days, from my point of view and many other people's point of view, that we really missed the boat on this. We really acted out of control in relationship to the reality of what was just a mild strain of flu. Correct or not correct?
Well, you know, that's a loaded question, the $64 million question, right, Curtis? Because we didn't know what the strain, this new strain, this H1N1 influenza A virus was going to do. And how it was going to mutate or not, and how severe the severity of the illness was going to be. So I feel, listening to everyone, and like you said very correctly, in the past 10 days, now we can sit back and see, did we overreact? Was there a lot of hype? And I must say that not knowing and getting the data in as far as the severity of the case, as far as the diseases, the illnesses, the influenza, flu-like symptoms have been, like, contagious with people, I think precautions are necessary to be taken at this point. And to what extent we have to go, you know, that remains to be seen as how many cases are coming down or how many people are being hospitalized. But I think right now what Janet Napolitano is saying and the other world WHO experts are saying, Dr. Chan, is that we have to now look back and see how much of humanity is, you know, is it really a threat? And if so, what measures we can do and undo and what we can go on from now moving forward. But it is true that as of the last count, as of Monday, there have been worldwide 1,085 confirmed cases in 21 countries. And I think this has moved up as we speak.
Now, I know, but we are a world of 3 billion people in which far more people have died from the vaccines that have been administered over the years to try to give relief to the spread of flus and viruses than the actual flus or viruses themselves.
Yes, that is absolutely correct. And that's why we have to go now look at, you know, the hype that's around it and assure people this is definitely, the data has come in. We are very clear that this is not a very severe, fatal kind of illness. It's a mild flu-like symptoms that is right now amenable to the drugs we have. And if we take care of our immune system and we live a little bit more healthier lifestyles, I think when the summer is here, is coming soon, the flu season is going to go down, and when the fall and the winter season is here, you can expect maybe the virus will resurface again, but we will be prepared for it.
Now, when you say it will resurface again, how might it resurface?
You know, that is interesting. Right now, the countries in the southern hemisphere, they're going to go through their winter. And we can have an idea whether this flu virus, this influenza flu, the swine flu virus, is going to mutate or going to, you know, change its severity or not. And depending on how it is, we can, you know, take action for ourselves the coming fall and the winter in September onwards.
So does this mean people will have to get vaccinated?
Well, I don't think, you know, you remember what happened in 1976 when that new strain of swine flu started infecting people and they worried the U.S. health officials and they started this widespread vaccination and more than 40 million people were vaccinated. And then they discovered there were 500 over cases of the Guillain-Barre, the severe neurological, you know, illness that happened on people, and more than 25 people died. You know, in the context of everything, I think you have to be very clear who needs to be vaccinated and who doesn't. And we have to see whether the strain of influenza that's affecting people during the winter months, is that the same strain we're talking about? Remember, the vaccines are very specific for a certain virus type only.
Now, question here is, we've seen cases diagnosed as swine flu in little pockets all over the United States, not in clusters, but sometimes in pockets far apart. And I'm saying to myself, could it be that under normal circumstances, when we're not responding to a particular kind of flu that has this name, swine flu, that under ordinary circumstances, people are coming down with swine flu, but we're just not aware of it because they have normal symptoms of what we would consider normal virus, normal flu.
That is exactly correct. In fact, they are finding that that even before the first outbreak was reported in Mexico and in California, there may have already been cases of people who have been down with the flu-like symptoms, and yet it wasn't detected, or, you know, it didn't come across as serious until they were sampling the cases that was hospitalized. Now, remember, those who are hospitalized is already having severe symptoms, and you know that during the flu season, you know, more than 200,000 people just in the U.S. Get down with the flu. But 36,000 people die every year just because of the seasonal flu. So there is an impact of this, you know. It may be very mild for some people, but people who have asthma or lung conditions, who have diabetes or cardiovascular diseases, the elderly, the very young, and those who live under, you know, poor nutrition, overcrowded, you know, cities or slum areas, they're going to be hit. And we have to watch out for them as well.
So let me ask a question, Dr. Nair. Based on what you've said, this may never be over.
We don't know. That's the thing. It may not be this influenza virus that comes. Maybe there'll be something else. But every once in every few years, we have seen a major epidemic that's coming out. Pigs, unfortunately, they are a reservoir for, you know, a lot of these viruses. The avian, you know, the bird flu, the human virus, the pig virus, the swine flu virus. It's called a genetic resortment. So they mix together the genetic material of all these combination viruses, and then that's how this current swine flu is, they determine the genetic makeup. It's so much from different sources.
Now,
so we have to be prepared. You know, the measures that we are taking now, washing hands, covering your nose and you know, mouth when you sneeze or cough, not going out to crowded places when you're sick, you know, those precautions have to be taken, you know, regardless of, you know, whether it's influenza A, the H1N1 swine flu, or anything else.
Now, Dr. Vijaya Nair, have you seen Slumdog Millionaire?
Yes, sir, I have.
Okay.
And I've been there, too.
Okay, and you've seen the scene where Prem Kumar, played by Neil Kapoor, is the host of the show. And what I would like to do is put you in that seat where I'm going to make you a millionaire. If you can answer this question, who was the president in 1976 when the swine flu was administered to many people in our nation? Was it A, Jimmy Carter? Was it B, Richard Nixon? Was it C, Gerald Ford? Or was it D, George Bush?
It's Gerald Ford.
Oh, millionaire! Millionaire! You're a millionaire! You see that? See, I could do that too, huh? It's not as
well. That we have a huge lesson to learn, as you rightly pointed out. There's so many complications with the vaccinations. You know, and I hesitate to tell people that, you know, please take care of your health. Go for the immune-boosting supplements. Take a good, healthy diet. And you can find a lot of these tips and articles on my website, thejeevasupplements.org, and in the book, Prevent Cancer, Strokes, Heart Attacks, and Other Deadly Killers. So I hope people will go there and take the tips and advice that we are giving on our website and the book.
Well, we wasted millions of dollars in 76 giving people all those vaccines. 500 people died. Only one person had died from the actual swine flu. But thanks for the advice, Dr. Nair. Next up, we are going to discuss all the hype and hysteria that was part of the media frenzy of the last 10 days, in which it was 24/7 swine flu, a.k.a. Mexican flu, a.k.a. N1H1 flu, on this The Curtis Lewa Show.
Don't believe the hype.
minutes to the top of the hour on this, the Curtis Sliwa Show. I feel like Flavor Flav wearing that clock around my neck. And Chuck D of Public Enemy just strumming me on. Don't believe the hype when it came to these 10 past days where we had 24-hour news coverage. Every nook, cranny, and corner of this country and Mexico was covered by the 24-hour nonstop media call to swine flu. On the line to give us some analysis of how they handled it, Sam Goldsmith, reporter for the New York Daily News. Thanks for jumping on board, Sam.
How are you? You know, I think you'd look good with that clock around your neck.
Yeah, except it would always tell the wrong time.
Yeah.
Because I'm always late for where I have to get. And I always use an excuse why I don't have a clock on. But anyway, Sam, dollar short, day late. It seemed to me the media was on this story. They just kept pressing the panic button.
Yeah, you know, people didn't know what to make of it at first. It was sort of a sudden thing. I think people in the general public and in the media and really in the health community didn't know what swine flu was when it first came up. They didn't know the effects. They didn't know where it came from. And it just was a big question mark.
Well, you see, I applied the same logic that we did when we were trying to figure out what was going wrong in Iraq there. Remember when we were getting all kinds of crazy body counts when Al-Qaeda and the Sunni and Shia adversaries were blasting everything to smithereens? All reporters went to the morgue. They figured you can get a much better idea of the true casualty count if you count the bodies stacked up at the morgue. So I have guardian angels in Mexico City, and last Friday night I told our leader, Vampiro, head to the morgues and head to the emergency wards, see how many people are in there suffering from what they claim is flu, and see how many new bodies the morgue has accepted. And the morgues throughout Mexico City were saying that the casualty count, meaning the fatalities, were just normal for the population base of 20 million. I would have thought that would have been a big hint that there wasn't all this death and the fatalities that initially we were reporting.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to compare it to the war in Iraq, but, you know, in this country, 30,000 people die of the flu every year, the regular flu. So I guess, you know, 10 days into this or so, the proof is in the pudding. I don't. How many swine flu deaths have we had in the United States? Well, two now. One was a Mexican toddler, and one was a woman who was already sick, already in bad health, and died, which is not uncommon when anyone gets any kind of flu in that condition.
Now, as a reporter, when you cover something like this, which is unusual, it's not a normal, everyday kind of thing where a credible organization, at least we thought it was credible, the World Health Organization, gives it a 5 rating on a pandemic level. What is the responsibility, would you say, of the journalists at that point to try to write a story that doesn't add to the fear, fright, hysteria, and hype?
It's difficult. I mean, when you have the CDC saying swine flu, if there's swine flu in a school, you should close the school, and then, you know, the epicenter of swine flu or supposed swine flu in the United States being right here in Queens, and they closed the school, it's hard to write a story about that I think in some ways doesn't make people hysterical. I think that's a natural response for many people. So it's a tough situation. In this case, it turned out that swine flu was not nearly as serious as people first imagined. But at the beginning, nobody knew. And, you know, you have to report a story that's out there.
Now, Sam, speaking of a different story, if you don't mind, last week, the big story coming out of our area of the United States to our many other stations was the fact that the White House sent Air Force One over Lower Manhattan and New Jersey, back and forth across the Hudson with an F-16 fighter detail. Today, when people such as yourself asked and inquired about the release of the photos that they said was the purpose of the flyover, the White House said they wouldn't release it. Can you figure out any cockamamie excuse as to why they wouldn't release photos?
Oh, I suppose they just want to put it behind them. I mean, I'm curious about the photos myself. I'd like to see them. But I think, you know, it was an embarrassing situation.
Do you think there's a possibility, Sam, and conspiratorialists want to know, that they never took any photos?
Oh, I don't want to speculate on that.
Well, I do, because I truly believe that this was a test of our preparedness and our readiness, God forbid, should there ever be a similar kind of attack in the future where you see F-16 fighter jets trailing an airliner, because nobody knew that that was Air Force One. It just looked like an airliner. And then you saw the reaction of people. They fled into the streets. The police were aware that this exercise was taking place. So I would suggest, and I'm throwing this out there for consumption, that no photos were ever taken. That wasn't the purpose of this trip of Air Force One. Oh, boy. 1-877, Curtis, the number 8. When we come back, we're going to be talking about stress tests on banks and why we're not giving more props to community banks and also to credit unions on this.